Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? On the podcast What We Spend, guests will, for 1 week, tell us everything they spend their money on.
My son slammed $6 worth of blueberries in 5 minutes.
And everything that makes them feel.
I want to own a house. I want to have a child. But this morning, I really wanted a coffee.
Because at the end of the day, money is always about more than your balance. Listen to and follow What We Spend, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
We were just talking a little NBA, and I was giving you my favorite bets for round one of the NBA playoffs, from a league that scores all the time to a team that very rarely scores. Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by Josh Vernier to talk about a team that has scored 8 runs in the last 6 nights. How are you doing today, Josh Vernier?
Oh, man, I'm doing quite well, C-Dot. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. I'm sure there's a musical artist that, you know, maybe your wife listens to, maybe on the radio, where you hear a song, and then you hear another song from that artist, and another song. You're like, man, all these guys' songs sound the same. Like, he just made the same song repeatedly and repeatedly. I feel like that's what every Royals game is like. Like, you have watched the same Royals game for 5 straight days.
Bro, you're 100% right. Listen, the post-game show last night, I could have ran the previous two. The issue was they were playing a different team. You know, and every night, yes, the offense disappoints for the most part. The big names don't come through as often as they did last year in the big spots. And outside of Cole Reagans, the rotation's been good, but not as dominating as it was out of the gates last season. The defense has been, you know, fine, but when the Royals are good, the defense is more than fine. It's one of the best in all of baseball. The base running is non-existent because you don't have base runners. Yeah, and that has been, as you point out, repeated throughout this road trip, this sizable road trip, C-Dot, that we talked about last Friday. Still searching for that second win, and once again, hoping Cole Reagans can deliver. They haven't won since the last time he was on the bump.
It feels to me, and you can tell me if I'm wrong here, that there are two kind of camps right now. There is a camp of it's early and that you shouldn't be overreacting. Look, we've only played 3 weeks of the baseball season. I think there also is another side, and that's the side that I'm on, is if you look at this team and the lineup they're trotting out there, it's not much different than the lineup that they had in September and in October, and they are struggling. So I'm not looking at this as just a three-week issue. I'm looking at this as now they have had 2 months of where they have struggled to consistently put up runs. I guess what side of this are you on, or do you think it's a hybrid of the two? Do you think it's too early to kind of panic and worry about their offense, or are you worried because there is just so much carryover from the team that made the playoffs last year?
Well, I think it's too early to panic. I don't know how fair it is to lump this first month of the season with the last month of last season because of the Vinny Pasquantino injury. But I also don't think that you should say all is well, nothing to worry about. There's still 142 games yet to play. Again, no reason to panic, but there's also no reason to bury your head in the sand. Okay, last September, no doubt about it, the offense was brutal, but it was also an offense that was so desperate they brought in Tommy Pham and Robbie Grossman and Yuli Gurriel. Now, Pham and Gurriel still getting it done at the big league level. But at the time, boy, that sure was a desperate... those were desperate additions after you lost a guy in Vinny Pasquantino. Too early to panic, but don't bury your head in the sand, because prior to that terrible month of September, the offense was, you know, middle of the road, 15th, 16th best in Major League Baseball. It wasn't anything to write home about, and yet it featured three guys that were certainly worthy of writing home about. You know, Salvi and Vinny last year, along with Bobby Witt Jr., were three of the best 15 hitters in Major League Baseball when it came to hitting with runners in scoring position. Salvi and Vinny last season combined to, when it came to ducks on the pond, right, the big moments, they hit 343 combined. This year, they're hitting a .188. I think they'll turn it around, but do I think they'll be top 15 in Major League Baseball when the season's done? I don't know. You know, Bobby's playing well. Bobby's an all-star. He's an MVP candidate. But last year, he put together, C-Dod, one of the 10 best seasons any shortstop has ever put together in the history of the sport. So you don't need to panic 20 games into the season. But repeating what you did last year offensively is unlikely. So if you're not going to get that Herculean effort from the big three, who's going to step up? Jonathan India was supposed to be one of the bats to step up. Hasn't happened so far. Michael Garcia's filled in and done what you expected to see from Jonathan India. But they need more, man. They need more from Vinny. They need more from Salvi, first and foremost. But those guys need some help, because to think that they're going to be all world again, Salvi at 35, it's asking a lot.
And that's why, at least for me, and I can only speak for my own feelings, my own frustration is, part of what has upset me about the commentary is it feels like the whole plan is, well, wait on Vinny and Salvi. And I understand, you mentioned the big three and the foundation and the core of this team, and that makes a lot of sense. But could we potentially be looking at a scenario where this team is 14-23, and then you get Vinny, and then you get Salvi? Because, and maybe this is scar tissue from Royals teams in the past, I've seen a lot of Aprils where they've played themselves out of anything meaningful because they've dug themselves in such a hole. And it usually, the hole they dig, it kind of looks like what their offense is digging for them right now.
Yeah. But even at, what'd you say, 15-23, 14-23, they're still in it. You know, the division won't be over. The final wild card spots won't be over. Yeah, 8-12, no doubt, is certainly disappointing. It's four games under. They were never four games under 500 last season, so that's new. I understand, and yes, I do think some of it has to do with scar tissue, because keep in mind, this 8-12 start since that championship season of 2015, this 8-12 start has been topped only three times. 2016, 2021, and last year. So 8-12, normally we're having a much better time with 8-12 in Kansas City. So the scar tissue, yes, is obvious. But I'll reiterate, man, if it was up to me and you could tell me one aspect of the team is going to be top-notch over the first 20 games, I would choose that facet to be the rotation, and that's what's happened. You have Reagan's on the hill tonight, Lugo coming up tomorrow. Yes, you're facing down the barrel of Tarek Skubal on Sunday, but with Colorado coming to town, man, this thing could feel very different this time next week on the backs of... on the backs of the pitching, yes, but also just on the backs of those big three. Yes, they need some help, but for as dire as things may feel, it can change very quickly.
Right now, we're joined by our guy, Josh Vernier, talking a little Royals baseball here. Happy to have him join us on the show today. Do you think, because of the rest of the struggles, that maybe people have focused a little bit too much on MJ Melendez? I know he is off to a really rough start. He is certainly part of the problem, but he is not the whole problem. But it seems like MJ Melendez and Hunter Renfroe, they are taking a majority of the criticism on how this offense has started.
Yeah, no, it's do they deserve a majority of the criticism? Maybe not, but I think a lot of the criticism is fair. You know, Renfro's yet to produce for a two-month stretch since signing that contract with the Royals. And, you know, what it's really about, again, for as much pressure as there is on Vinny and Bobby and Salvi, what this team is missing is more thump, right? They only have 10 home runs this season. There's a guy in Oakland that has 9 all by himself. Every team has at least a dozen home runs, and the Royals are stuck on 10. The guys that can hit home runs that you can legitimately expect to run into 20, 25 home runs, they have that type of talent, are MJ Melendez and Hunter Renfro and Michael Massey, the three most disappointing bats so far in 2025. Yes, Salvi and Vinny are disappointing, but we at least have a track record to fall back on. Hunter Renfro has a track record, sure, but that track record is getting pretty hard to see in the rearview mirror, so I don't know how much solace I take in the fact that he was someone you could rely on. They're getting too much, but C-Dot, you've been around long enough. Chris Getz, Omar Infante, Nicky Lopez. Yeah, guys at the bottom of the lineup often take the brunt of the criticism because in their hearts, haters still like Bobby and Vinny and Salvi, and they don't want to crush, just like they didn't want to crush Hosmer and Moose and Kane back in the day.
I just look at it with MJ Melendez, and I think part of what has kind of fueled the frustration is all offseason we were told that his swing was improved, that they had worked on it, that they had fixed it, and he seems to be as lost and as far off from the target as possible. Like, there was like real hope and optimism about MJ. He was a guy that could catch. He was a guy that could play in the outfield. He looked like a guy that had all of the tools. The player that is currently playing for the Royals doesn't look anything like the guy, at least what we projected him to be 3 years ago.
Well, he's the athlete, right? He's still the defender. He's, you know, metrically one of the best defensive corner outfielders in baseball. But no, he's not the 20 to 30 home run prolific power guy that many people expected him to be. Certainly, MJ has been disappointing. No way around that. Yeah.
Right now, we're talking to Josh Vernier here for a few more minutes. Now, Josh, I'm going to ask you this question. I've never asked you this question before, and I know how people are going to hear it, but I have to ask you the question. What if last year was the last great Salvador Perez year? Because usually, you don't continue your level of production at his position at his age. He's going to be 35 years old in less than a month. And the fact that at 34, with the amount of games that he has caught, he hit 271 with 27 home runs and 104 RBIs. Like, that is one of the better catching seasons in the history of the league. You and I both know the end usually comes a lot faster than people want to acknowledge it. I think there is a lot of belief that Salvi is going to turn things around. And he's certainly a better hitter than what he is. But what if Salvi isn't Salvi anymore? Can this offense save itself?
Well, early returns would certainly say no. No, no, there's not an answer if you don't have a very good Salvador Perez. And last year he was very good. I'm not saying I need the 48 home runs that we saw a few seasons ago, but I need better than league average. I need a guy that comes through in the big spots. If that guy doesn't show up, and I still believe he will, to be the type of player that Salvi is, that he was at the age of 33 and 34, the way that he comes back from injuries, you don't become a Hall of Famer and not have another gear, right? If it's going to be the toughest flame to snuff out, a lot like, you know, a Travis Kelce, just when you think he's done, there's a little bit more. But to your point, even Kelce, like Salvi, they'll all eventually reach that wall. But no, there is no replacement, again, unless Hunter Renfro, Michael Massey, and MJ Melendez become those players that we thought they were going to be. And one more note about MJ. You mentioned the swing changes and how encouraged everyone was. A lot of that encouragement was from the outside, right? People that saw the changes and were hopeful for MJ. But I didn't hear much from the organization of them touting that MJ was fixed or that these swing changes would pay dividends immediately. It was a hope. There was hope that he would. There was excitement that he was willing to change, right? You can't be stubborn, especially when you don't have a track record. So I think there was excitement that he was willing to evolve, willing to try something new. But no, so far, he is certainly not going to be the guy to replace Salvi.
right now, we're talking to Josh Vernier here for a couple more minutes, getting his thoughts on the Royals. Vern, give me something positive. I feel like for the last 15 minutes, I've just thrown negative questions at you, and I don't want to be negative about the Royals. I mean, if you've been watching this team, it's hard to be super excited about the product that you are watching right now. It is not all bad with the Royals. You look at a guy like Mikel Garcia. He's been really good. You mentioned the rotation. Yeah. Like, it is not all bad with the Royals. What have you been most encouraged by with this club?
Most encouraged. Yeah, Mikel, what I'm seeing from Mikel, I knew that was in there. The question is can he do it over an extended period of time? So I wouldn't say that's the answer. Bobby, no, we knew he was a stud. You know, Chris Bubich jumps out at you, but, you know, especially that start in New York, you know, I thought that was a pretty big spot for him. The first time in his career as a starting pitcher, team with the backup against the wall. Team with real expectations, pitching on the road, and I thought Bubich answered pretty well in his start the other day in the Bronx, 5 1/3, 3 earned runs. Yeah, maybe Chris Bubich would be the most encouraged, because, yeah, it's nothing defensively, nothing on the base paths. Offensively, yeah, Mikel and Bobby are the only ones worth a darn right now. I knew Cole Reagans was a stud. I'm questioning Lugo and Waka for the rest of 2025. Bullpen, you lost Hunter Harvey, so I can't say that. Boy, yeah, it hasn't been the best 20-game start, but I've seen a lot worse. The answer to the question, though, would be Chris Bubich.
You mentioned the Rockies coming up, and they'll be in town next week. How much of this do you think is the schedule? Because I'm looking at the schedule, and I'm not making it seem like this was the lightest schedule that you possibly could have had. I also don't know if it was the toughest. I think they've just played like opponents. You look at Cleveland, you look at Baltimore, you look at Minnesota, like Milwaukee. They've played teams, I think, around what the Royals are. I do think there is a certain level of hope that, all right, we should be able to get right just a little bit starting next week, and we are going to have a little bit of relief from the schedule. Is that kind of what you're holding on to, that all you got to do is get past this series with the Tigers and the schedule is going to lighten up just a little bit?
Yeah, it's still big league teams. You got to hit, you got to defend, you got to run the – no, they're not – they haven't really played very good baseball. They've played fine baseball. Good baseball at times. I think there was one game on that recent homestand that stood out to me as maybe a great all-around effort. But honestly, so far, especially on this sizable road trip, they've looked like a third-tier team. You know, top-tier teams like the Yankees and Dodgers, where it's World Series or bust. Second-tier, which is where the Royals need to be, where it's playoffs or bust, where you carry yourself expecting to win on a nightly basis. In New York, at times in Cleveland, last night, it feels like you're on that third tier where, man, we just want to have a fun summer. Can they at least get us through the summer? We're done with those get us through the summer days. So, you know, what I want to see is just them a better brand of baseball, some tighter defense, you know, do something that I can say, wow, you might be able to bully a team with that. You know, the bullpen was showing signs of that early, and then Hunter Harvey went down with the injury, so that's gone up in flames. The rotation's good, but again, I'm curious about Lugo and Waka as this season goes on. Can that trio with Reagans, can they really bully opponents? Yes, I think they can keep you in every game, but can they be the reason why you win on a nightly basis like they were last year? Those are the things I'm watching for.
A couple more questions here, Vern. Are you a frosty malt individual or a frozen lemonade?
Frosty malt out of the two.
Do you get the wooden spoon or do you ask for a plastic one?
Whatever comes with it, but I would prefer a plastic one.
Are you a Dippin' Dots guy? I've taken a lot of grief on this show for being someone who loves Dippin' Dots. Where are you at?
Yeah. I mean, I'm never buying it, but if someone offers it to me and they'll pay for it, yeah, I'm all about it.
I like Dippin' Dots. I don't know. Maybe because it's just so different. I like the flavors about it. I like Dippin' Dots. The text line hates it, though.
Yeah, it's just a rough look. It's a rough look with the little cup and the little spoon, bringing it to your mouth. It's a tough look.
I am excited to come out to the ballpark. I'm going to try to come to one of these games against the Rockies. I'm going to try to come just because I think they might score in those games and they might win. It's been a while since I've felt like that about the Royals. I just want to see it for myself.
the two worst offenses in Major League Baseball coming to Kauffman Stadium starting on Tuesday night. Should be fun.
I'll get you out of here with this question. It's Rockies related. The Rockies have already fired their hitting coach. Now, the Rockies are in way worse position than the Royals are. The Rockies, I mean, they might as well start football season in Denver. Their baseball season is completely over. Could you see the Royals doing something drastic early in the season, or is everybody just taking the company stance? Hey, we are going to stay patient. We're going to keep toeing the line, and eventually we'll get out of this.
Yeah, the latter. Royals have fired their hitting coach this early into the season. Terry Bradshaw, a few years ago, they gave him the pink slip and tried to make him wear it for the team being awful. No. And again, the Royals have three hitting coaches. You know, if three of the best, right, you're in the big leagues, you're doing something right, you're at the height of your profession. If three dudes can't get through to these guys, maybe it's the guys and not the coaches.
That is our guy, Josh Vern. You're joining us on the show today. Always excited to talk to him. Vern, man, great stuff as always. Man, you know what? For your sake, not for my sake, not for any listeners, I want the Royals to score 9 runs today. I just want them to score. I don't even care if they win or lose. I just want you to just see them hit the ball and move the line and look like a team who could possibly come out on the other side.
Let's all bet the over. Let's do it. I'm with it.
Okay. Well, you know what? I'm not in the business of donating money to FanDuel. You might be in the business of donating money to them. I'm going to find other things to do other than Royals overs. I appreciate you, Vern.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
That is Josh Vern. You're joining us on the show today. You know how wild you got to be to bet the Royals over right now? I mean, I'm not saying it can't hit. It's gambling, right? Anything can happen. When you think something is a sure thing, oh, I'm taking the under for sure, the over will absolutely hit. You know how wild you got to be right now to take the over on the Royals? What's their over today on run score? Just
individual? 4.5 for the Royals.
As a singular team?
It's 4.5 for the Royals, and I believe I saw 7.5 for the game because it's Reagan's on the hill.
What's the odds for the under? On just Royals runs?
I don't remember the odds. I just remember those are the numbers.
Well, I know this. If you've been rolling over -4.5 runs for the Royals, you've been rolling that over. You might be able to retire right now for the last. They haven't done that in 3 weeks. They haven't scored more than 4 runs. Just carrying and rolling it over. I mean, today's the day they win 5-2. I mean, we know how baseball works. They win 5-2 today.
All right. So the under for 7.5 total runs is -105, over -15. So I mean, there's a little bit of something there. If you want to make that bet, let me find the Royals total runs. That's the real fun one. Royals total runs, the under of 4.5 is -146. The over of 4.5 is +114.
Yeah, of course. Of course. It's absolutely plus money for them to hit the over. Let me ask you this. Do you think that the average fan, the general public, is keeping up with how Jack Caglione is performing in the minors? Because we are here at the office. We have a sheet. It gets updated constantly. This is where Jack Caglione is as of right now. He is hitting .224. He has an on-base percentage of .298. He has hit 3 home runs in 12 games. He has 15 RBIs, and he has struck out 14 times. Now, I'm not here telling you that Jack Caglione is a bust. I'm not telling you that he is not good. I'm not saying any of those things. Don't take it that way. I know how you guys feel about Jack. I think it's going to take a little bit more time than you guys are anticipating, and I would not look at him right now as being someone who is in a position to come save the Royals offensively. Now, if he was hitting .400 and he was really forcing your hand and forcing you to do something, maybe that's a direction you would go to kind of swing things in your favor and kind of shake things up a little bit. He's not playing well enough for us to be having the conversation about him coming up to help the big league club right now. But he's not supposed to be helping the big league club right now. He's played less than a month of minor league AA baseball. He's played less than a month. He's 21 years old. So it's just going to take a little bit of time. It's going to take a little bit of time. He's hitting .220 and has a less than .300 on base percentage and has struck out 14 times in 12 games at AA. He is not ready to be playing for the Royals right now, and that's perfectly fine. He shouldn't be ready to play for the Royals. That's not on track with kind of guys at his position. So I hope, maybe, possibly, haven't seen it of late. I hope we're not having the Cags conversation yet because I think it is incredibly premature to be having that conversation. Coming up on the other side, Let's get back to the NFL draft for just a little bit, because I think everybody that loves the draft, everybody that thinks that they are a armchair general manager, they have all been in a very familiar place. I'll tell you where that is. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All of us that watch college football and watch the NFL believe that we can be draft analysts. We all believe it. I think that it's fun. I don't mind people filling out their mock drafts. Sure. Your chances of getting them right, they're not much different than the professionals. We see Mel Kiper's mock drafts. We see Daniel Jeremiah. They miss on picks. You're allowed to give your analysis and picks and predictions on how you think guys are going to be. You're going to get stuff right. You're going to get stuff wrong. Even the professionals do that. So have at it. I am a believer that everybody that watches college football or the NFL has had a quarterback they were sure was going to be a franchise guy, and you missed. I mean, you missed bad. Not a little bit. Not like, oh, hey, I think Tua can be the next thing, and then Tua turns out to be a good starter in the league, but he didn't know. I mean, you thought Josh Rosen was it. I'll give you my two. I used to fall for the Pac-12 every single time. I remember when Matt Leinart was coming out of USC. And Matt Leinart, you remember, was a top 10 pick. He got drafted by the Cardinals. And not just drafted by the Cardinals. This was when the Cardinals had Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin. Rob, you could not... It was like the perfect situation. You were going to give this great college quarterback all of these weapons around him, convinced that Matt Leinart was going to be the truth. I was wrong. Another Pac-12 quarterback I fell for it with was Joey Harrington. Remember Joey Harrington out of Oregon? He was like 6'4", had a little bit of mobility, big arm, was convinced that Joey Harrington was going to be a good starting quarterback in the league. I was wrong. There's no shame in missing on the NFL draft. Everybody misses. Text line 913-586-7965. Who was your quarterback? I'll even go through some Chiefs draft picks that I was convinced, man, I really love this pick. But why don't we start with quarterbacks? Rob, I know you got a couple of QBs that when you saw them get drafted, I thought the league was unnecessarily harsh on Josh Rosen. I thought they disliked Josh Rosen because he was too smart. Remember coming out of college, he was a little smarter than everybody else. He had a kind of a smart mouth, and they were just real critical of him. I'm thinking, why are y'all hating on this guy? Got flamed out of the league, wasn't in the league 3 years later. Maybe they knew what they were talking about. Who's that guy for you?
Jimmy Clausen.
Oh, you fell for the Clausen.
I fell for Jimmy Clausen. That was probably around the time I was freshman, sophomore in college. And I remember, first off, Mel Kiper was selling that dream harder than anyone.
Yeah, 100%.
I was buying what Mel Kiper was selling, because remember at that time, college football had begun its pivot. There was now, the spread was starting to come more in vogue. Oregon was a thing. Like, locally, Kansas and Missouri and even K-State, they ran a variation of the spread. Mike Leach's air raid. Like, the traditional under-center quarterback was starting to become a little bit extinct at the college level. And Jimmy Clausen played for Charlie Weiss at Notre Dame, and he would get under center and seven-step drop, boom, and he had a big arm. And remember, they had that one bowl game against Hawaii where he would just throwing lasers all over the field. I thought the NFL needs NFL-style quarterbacks, and that these spread guys aren't going to work. And a person like Jimmy Clausen, who's been running an NFL system his entire college career, is going to come in, hit the ground running, and you're going to see college begin to pivot back because the spread is killing them in the league. I was wrong. The NFL just joined the spread revolution, and Jimmy Clausen was a career backup. I don't even know if he's a career backup. He was a backup for a while and then washed out of the league. But I was buying Jimmy Clausen hype. And remember, he was at one point the top recruit in the country, and he for California. The whole thing with Jimmy Clausen, I bought into.
Text line 913-586-7965. CDOT, I remember you liked Marcus Mariota as well. I still contend that Marcus Mariota was going to be a good quarterback. I just think the injuries are what derailed him. Marcus Mariota's first 2 years in the league, he was trending to be a good quarterback in the league. I just think his body fell apart. I don't put Marcus Mariota in the category of you were wrong if you believed in him. There certainly was some guys that you were wrong on. I don't put him in that same category. Let me give you two Chiefs picks that now looking back, like, man, I was on here selling dreams to you guys. DeAnthony Thomas is at the top of my list.
I think he's the top of every Chiefs player.
When they got DeAnthony Thomas in the fourth round at pick 124, because you and I watch a lot of college football, he was explosive at Oregon. Explosive. Now, I didn't think that he was going to be a star player in the league, but I was thinking, hey, if you got Tavon Austin in the fourth round and you got a guy that can be Shakir for the Bills, maybe is a good example, Khalil Shakir. Man, if you got that guy with a little bit more elusiveness in the fourth round and you can have him be an explosive returner, hey, I thought that DeAnthony Thomas was going to be a very, very good player. I would also say I fell for it with Nile Davis, too. SEC running back. Arkansas usually does a really good job of kind of having former running backs turn into decent pros in the league. I thought that Nile Davis, certainly with where you selected him, I thought he was going to be very good, bang for your buck, a great value pick. Those are two guys I'll throw out there. I'll also give you, Rob, I'll give you a Missouri guy that I looked at when they got drafted, like, oh, this is going to work out. Remember Ziggy Hood? Ziggy yep. Hood that got drafted by the Steelers. Late first-round pick, got drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers. Perfect landing spot for Ziggy Hood. Thought he was going to be a good pro. His career didn't turn out that way. But two Chiefs guys I was wrong on, DeAnthony Thomas and now Davis. Ziggy Hood for Mizzou is another Mizzou player that I thought got drafted in the right situation and was going to have a much better career than he turns it out having.
I got two Chiefs, but I have a question about the first Chief that I fell for it with. He's not technically a draft pick, but I fell for it hard with Marcus Cooper. I know he wasn't really a draft pick, but he was part of that like wave of undrafted guys they brought in.
A lot of people were selling that Marcus Cooper hype.
I thought he was the diet Richard Sherman. He was long, he was athletic, and then you found out he was running in quicksand. It was, that one may not count as a draft pick, but that one. And then you know what? I thought John Baldwin was better than Julio Jones. Like, remember when Scott Pioli said that?
Oh, my goodness.
Remember when that story came out that Scott Pioli was talking to Thomas Dimitroff?
I was never in all the way on Jonathan Baldwin. Yeah, I never fell for it like that. I'm not saying I thought he was going to bust the way that he did.
I didn't think
but you
want
to know how I knew? This is when I knew that you guys were in line about to get took. The two plays we talked about the most from John Baldwin were, remember, he made this magical catch in OTAs, but we never saw the video from it. Like, every Chiefs player back then was telling you how amazing this catch was. And if it was that good, we would have saw it. I know this was like pre before social media got going. If it was that good, we would have saw it. And he made that great catch against the Broncos that didn't count, and everybody was just holding on to this catch that he made. And I'm like, no! I never fell for it with John Baldwin the way that a lot of other people did. I'm proud of that. I fell for some other ones. Dexter McCluster every year at OTAs. We've all fallen for our fair share. I never fell for the John Baldwin.
I mean, the story came out. It was like post-draft. The story came out that, you know, Scott Pioli was telling his buddy Thomas Dimitroff, you don't need to take Julio Jones. You can wait and take John Baldwin. And then Scott Pioli took John Baldwin. And, you know, he was good at Pitt. As a college football fan, I remember him being good at Pitt. He was a guy that, like, he was chasing a lot of Larry Fitzgerald's records. I thought, oh, and he was doing it with no quarterback at Pitt. I thought the Chiefs had found something, and I won that. And remember, that was the time where every Chiefs fan, myself included, was like, they need a number two wideout because Dwayne Bowen bums, and I thought they had found it. They didn't.
Is there a player that you got right that you kind of pat yourself on the back? Now, I know no one will give me credit for this. I wish I had kept the audio. I saw it with Russell Wilson very early. He just had something. You know, there's like a player, you just see it really early on. If you watched him back at NC State, I think you saw it with him. I also think you saw it in Wisconsin. I still maintain Russell Wilson was the best college football player that year. If you remember, Wisconsin lost two games that year. Both of them were on last-second Hail Marys. That's the only reason why Wisconsin didn't go undefeated and why they didn't have a chance to win the national championship. I will pat myself on the back and say that I saw it with Russell Wilson.
I'm trying to – I mean, in a Chiefs sense, I knew there was nothing there with Tyson Jackson. Does that count? Does that – Tyson Jackson.
Oh, that was when they went through that LSU. Remember, yeah, they just every year they would just draft somebody from LSU. They did it for like three straight years in the first round.
I remember it was.
They also got Glenn Dorsey, too. Yeah.
I remember the big selling point on Tyson Jackson was no one clogs the middle more. And I'm like, that's not an impressive skill to draft at five overall. So I was right. He wasn't that dude, but I don't know that's like gloat worthy that everyone knew the bust was going to be the bust.
Well, just let me know. Text line 913-586-7965. Is there a player that you pat yourself on the back on and you're like, hey, I saw this guy before. I got it right on this guy. That person for me would be Russell Wilson. I think I saw it very early on with Russell Wilson. I've also gotten picks wrong. That is just kind of how this thing works. All right, coming up on the other side, let's get back to the Royals. They have had a rough week. We'll talk about it. Keep it right here. So drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. On your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Some exclusive media news. This is from Front Office Sports. Shannon Sharp, he has a podcast deal with Colin Cowherd. He is part of the Volume Podcast Network. That deal is expiring. Shannon Sharp has received multiple offers for his podcast. He has two. He has the Club Shay Shay podcast. He also has the Nightcap one that he does with Ocho Cinco. He has received multiple offers and is expected to sign a deal, Rob, that would exceed $100 million. So the two podcasts that Shannon Sharp has signed, he is about to cash out on both of those. He had the big interview last year with Cat Williams that went super viral last year, and he's just continued to be in the news cycle. So Shannon Sharp, I mean, getting away from Skip Bayless is one of the best business decisions that he has made. It looks like he is about to sell his two podcasts for $100 million. That is being reported right now by Front Office Sports. Let's talk about this. Let's get back to the Royals. I don't say this to be negative. I say this as just a observation. Some of you are watching the Royals every single day, and I think you could possibly attest to this. I think the Royals right now are the worst kind of team to watch and cheer for. And it's not anything with the front office. It's not that they got a group of bad. None of those things. They don't score. I made the analogy earlier with Vern, and I think it applies. Some of you love music. And when I mention this kind of artist, there's an artist that comes to mind. They make the same song over and over and over. That you hear him, it's like, wait, this song sounds like this song. This guy just keeps making the same music. When is he going to do something else? It does feel, Rob, that we have been stuck in Groundhog's Day with the Royals for now 2 weeks. Every Royals game for the last 2 weeks has essentially been the exact same game. Every thought that I have about the Royals, what I thought about the Royals today is the exact same thought that I had last Friday about this team. It just feels like we are in this holding pattern where we are just simply waiting for something to change with the Royals. Now, maybe that is a position coach changes. Maybe that is they do a drastic shakeup with the lineup. Maybe they bring somebody up, at least when it comes to something. But a team that you watch every single day or every single week that can't score is by far and away the most frustrating team to cheer for. It would be better if the Royals were losing these games 9-7, and it was just guys were hitting home runs and guys were hitting doubles and guys were stealing bases. And yeah, they were losing, but they were doing so in like a fun, entertaining fashion. There ain't nothing entertaining about watching them put up 1-2 runs every single night. Or feel like even when they get off to an early start and they're up 2-0 in the second inning, man, you know that's just not going to be enough to hold it. The Royals have one hitter right now that is hitting over 300. They have 9 home runs as a team, or 10 home runs as a team. The major league lead right now for an individual is 9. They are dead last in home runs. There are only 3 teams in Major League Baseball that have scored fewer runs than the Royals. Like, they are not putting a fun and exciting product on the field. I know at some point, now we're not going to be the ones to do it. I think we did that enough last year, but someone is going to criticize the attendance. Hey, why are you guys not going out there? Are the Royals putting a product out there that you want to go watch them play on a Wednesday so you can watch them score one run? It just feels like we are stuck in Groundhog's Day, and every day, every game, every talking point for everybody feels like it's the exact same. They just can't score enough runs, I think, to really hold your interest or be exciting.
And I think, and it's a conversation we've had, but I think you see the glass half full, glass half empty as a viewer or a listener every single night. Because they can't score, but they are a good pitching team, you feel like you're in every game. Like, I was out and about doing some stuff last night, getting some dinner with friends and family, and I was watching the game, and it's, you know, the third, fourth, fifth inning. It's 1-0. It's 2-0. It's 3-0. 3 runs in baseball should not be a death sentence. You felt like, oh, the Royals are still in this game. They had the bases loaded at 1.1 out. You feel like, okay, this is where the offense breaks through. It's 4-1. They might be able to get back in this game. They're so close, and that's the glass half full. Hey, they're never out of it because they're pitching. But the glass half empty exists in every game too, because if, and now Cole Reagan's going tonight, and Cole Reagan's very good, but let's say he gives up 4 runs tonight. Let's say you're headed into the 6th inning and it's 4-2 Tigers. As a fan, you think, oh, there's no chance they're getting to 5. They cannot get over this hurdle of 4 runs. It's just insurmountable. So you feel like, yes, it's so close, but also so far away. And that's why I think Royals fans fall in those two camps where it's like the one camp's like they're in games, they'll break through. And the other camp is like they can't score. You can never break through if you don't score. I think you see that exact conversation in every singular game.
Text line 913-586-7965. CDOT, last week you were arguing that the Royals were giving us a competitive team. Remember the kid with the C-plus grades? I mean, I still feel that way about the Royals. I don't think the Royals are losing 100 games. I think they're too talented and too good for that. I also don't think that their offensive troubles are going to last enough. But I think the expectations for the Royals have simply just changed. I think the Royals can win 78 games. I would deem that to be competitive. And this year is going to be a failure based on what we expected them to do at the very, very beginning of the season. This is the only fear that I have about the Royals at this point. Are they taking on too much water that ultimately, when they try to fix some of the problems, they have just created too much of a mess for themselves? And I said this to Vern. Maybe this is just scar tissue from watching Royals teams in the past. Man, I've seen a lot of April Royals baseball teams that looked a lot like this one. A whole mess of them. Most of our lives, we have seen a Royals team in April that looks like this one. And my fear is one day we will wake up, we will blink, and next thing we know, the Royals will be 14-23, and they really got to play incredible baseball to get to a point where they can get back to making the postseason. But I still maintain, if the goal for the Royals is to not embarrass us anymore and be a team that can win 77 games this year, I think they've accomplished that. If the goal is to keep our interest and intrigue until football takes over and then we can move on from the Royals, I still feel that way. But the hope for the Royals this year wasn't just that they were just going to keep status quo. It was that the Royals were going to improve. It was that the Royals are going to be better. Very little about this team so far through the first 3 weeks of the season feels like they are a better team or a better product than what they've given us, at least not last year. We can keep this Royals conversation going. I also want to get back to the NFL draft. We are less than a week away from round 1. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.